Well, hey there, all you vinyl maniacs. Have you heard about AudiophileUSA.com? AudiophileUSA.com is an online record shop that only deals with records that are in near mint shape, often still sealed original vinyl pressings. Now, how the hell you find an original still sealed vinyl pressing of a 40 or 50 year old record, I have no idea. But they are out there, likely original store stock, often with the original hype sticker still intact, and the team at AudiophileUSA.com finds them and makes them available to you. No more dealing with sellers who grade VG pressings as near mint and sell them to suckers on eBay or Discogs. At AudiophileUSA.com, you are guaranteed high quality records in beautiful condition. And for our international listeners, you are in luck because AudiophileUSA.com ships globally. So what are you waiting for? Head over there now, AudiophileUSA.com, and find your holy grail. Now, let's start this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide.
Do you listen to and collect vinyl records? Well, you're in luck. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast made for record nerds like yourself. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Well, all right. Hey, everyone, it's Nate, host of The Vinyl Guide. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for tuning into this week's episode, number 199 of the Vinyl Guide podcast. And look, right out of the gate, I do want to thank everyone who sent their notes of concern around the Australian bushfires. As of today, still huge chunks of our country are still on fire. It is starting to rain a little bit here, which is nice. It kind of provides a little bit of hope, but there's still a lot of people who are fighting those fires, and a lot of people who have been affected by them. And one of the great things about Australia is you see these people come together when there is a disaster and help take care of those who've been affected. And I do want to thank the Patreon supporters of our show. We are turning over every single dollar that we collect from our Patreon page, patreon.com/vinylguide. We're turning every dollar over to the bushfire victims. And I do want to thank everyone who stepped up and started contributing up there at patreon.com/vinylguide. You get extra podcast stuff, extra vinyl content. There's some secret episodes up there that are only for our Patreon community. So it's not too late. Head over to patreon.com/vinylguide. Get all that extra stuff and help those affected by the Australian bushfires. That's patreon.com/vinylguide. And thanks in advance for your support. This week on the show, episode 199, we are talking to Mackie Osborne, artist and art director for many albums that you likely have in your collection, including visuals for bands like Tool, Melvin, Social Distortion, Bad Religion, heaps more. Today, Mackie discusses the art of the album cover and her processes and her areas of responsibility for these ambitious projects like Tool's Fear Inoculum and Melvin's handcrafted 13 CD box set. It's a fun chat with an absolutely crucial contributor to the music and the art we record collectors love, so please enjoy the interview. Also, if you are in Los Angeles, Mackie has an art show coming up January 17th, Inky Psyops and Printed Schemes with Joe Hazelmeyer of Amphetamine Reptile Records. It's going to be a big evening, a big art show. Buzz Osborne is doing a solo set. There's going to be some super rare Amphetamine Reptile Records available that night. It sounds like a really cool evening. So Los Angelinos, make plans to go to the Inky Psyops and Printed Schemes art show January 17th. La La Land Gallery. More details available at facebook.com/Mackie Osborne Design Stuff. And hey, if you enjoyed today's episode and conversations with interesting folks like Mackie Osborne, check out our back catalog of episodes at thevinylguide.com. We have nearly 200 conversations with really interesting folks on music and record activities, such as Bob Lefsetz, episode 192 of The Vinyl Guide, Trey Spruance of Mr. Bungle and Secret Chiefs 3, episodes 180 and 181 of The Vinyl Guide, Dimitri Coates of my favorite punk band Off, episode 164, Cody Willis, Melvin's Big Business, episode 156. And if you want to hear more about me, and I know you don't, check out the Danko Jones podcast. I was just featured on it. We had a great conversation about records and podcasts and all sorts of interesting stuff. That's the Danko Jones podcast. All other Vinyl Guide episodes can be had at thevinylguide.com. Check us out on Spotify or however you get your podcasts. All right, now I've got your attention. Listen to me, people. You need to take a long, hard look at your record cleaner. If it's not a groove washer record cleaner, I want you to pick that thing up and throw it out the window now. It's probably garbage anyway. Then, once your soul is clean from that, you need to get a proper record cleaner. Groovewasher.com is the best manual record cleaner on the market, bar none. I have tried them all, even that crappy one you just threw out the window, and I am here to tell you that the Groove Washer outshines them all. The G2 fluid in the Groove Washer thoroughly cleans your vinyl deep and makes your records sound their very best and last their very longest. And if that is still not enough to convince you, here's a 10% off coupon code from your buddy Nate. Go to groovewasher.com, use checkout code VinylGuide10, and you'll get 10% off everything from groovewasher.com. Do it now. Life is short. Listen to clean records. groovewasher.com, promo code VinylGuide10. All right, and with the upfronts done, let's get into our conversation with Mackie Osborne on the art of the album package. This week on The Vinyl Guide, we welcome Mackie Osborne, artist and contributor to many albums in my music collection, possibly yours as well. Hi, Mackie. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello.
Mackie, your work is so integral to so many albums I enjoy, especially ones from Melvins, Tool, Bad Religion, and more. I know you've done cover art. However, I'm sure there's much, much more. How do you describe your role with these projects?
With the music packaging?
Yes.
It's anywhere from just decorating, you know, a regular package, like a jewels case or a digipack, to actually designing all the box and the material that gets decorated for the packaging, and then figuring out where that's going to get manufactured.
Okay, so you get in deep into the logistics as well.
Sometimes. Like with Tool, yeah, for sure. Because we get to make things that are not your standard package, and so then it's a matter of trying to figure out where we can actually build that thing.
Yeah. Projects and packages from Tool and Melvins are incredibly ambitious. What, like, where does a project like Fear Inoculum start? Like, how much in advance? Like, what are the early conversations on that?
I guess the earliest conversation was that the main element that we wanted to include that isn't standard as the video. So I started researching companies that make, you know, video greeting cards, and from there found a lot of different resources for that. But I think this is the first time it's ever been produced on anything that was sold on the retail level, at least for sure in the music realm. So that was a whole nother hurdle that we had to cross, was figuring out how to produce something that could legally be sold, because there's a lot more restrictions when you're actually selling something in a store than there is when you're just, you know, like sending out something for promotion, which is what the company that we ended up working with, that they've done a lot of that kind of thing, but strictly for promotion, so never for sale.
I imagine you have to deal with a lot of things that are somewhat new, especially with this package, in terms of like even just disposal. And there's batteries and lithium inside this package, so
exactly
maybe it's hazardous. I'm not sure, but you know, there's certain rules and guidance of how to handle it.
Yeah, there's a lot of rules.
For example, this, or you worked on 10,000 Days as well, where Adam may come up with an idea. In this case, it was a video. In 10,000 Days, it was the stereoscopic imagery, and say, okay, here's my vision. Mackie, help me put this together.
Yeah, yeah. So find resources. We found a place that could manufacture the lenses at a price that made the package relatively affordable, and that was one of that's always one of the leaps, is trying to find out how to do something and still keep the product affordable. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so we found a place that manufactured the lenses. I think they still have like piles of the lenses somewhere, because we had to make a large quantity of them.
So somewhere out there, if there's a band who wants to make a stereoscopic CD, then you could potentially get a deal on that.
Yeah, maybe.
So
or maybe they'll do another one.
Oh, that'd be nice. I'd love to see it on vinyl some point. So as being the art director, let me know if I'm wrong here, but you would be the person that's kind of leading the different elements, the contributors to the packaging. So you're dealing with software developers that will make a bit of software to where when the package opens, the video automatically plays and it plays twice, and the whole experience, that's kind of what you're in charge of. Yeah.
That was handled, like that aspect of it was handled by the company that manufactures the video cards, because that's part of what they do. So I just, you know, I found a company that has been specializing in that kind of, like in different video packages for promotion. And so they had that expertise about how to do that. So we worked with them on setting up the package so that it would play the number of times we wanted it to play and turn off when you shut it and, you know, be able to pause or push play, because there's a lot of different choices you have.
And the package, again, it's just, it works beautifully. And as a former software designer myself, I've found almost no bugs or issues with it. So the quality is actually quite high. Is there anything that you would have liked to see in this package that didn't show up in the end result?
One of the things that we set about to do was to make three different versions of it. And I was hoping that the different versions would be a little more obvious than they ended up coming out. But a lot of the design aspect was pushed until the very last minute, and we had a lot of problems on the press. So there wasn't really time to play with making things as different as I would have liked. So we have there are three versions of the video box, but they're subtle.
Yeah, there's the designs on the back, I think.
Those are different. And then the cover has different either foil stamping or different UV coating that makes them different. And there's one that we, you know, printed the highest percentage of, and then there's the other two have less, and then another one has less. So there's three versions, and there's minimal quantity of one, and then the other ones are, you know, a little more and then a little more. So
you guys know how to pull in the heartstrings of us collectors. You really do.
Yeah, right. That was the point.
was the original thought to, let's maybe have three different videos?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay.
No. Don't want to piss people off that much.
So what is a typical day for you, Mackie?
I have no typical day. There's no such thing as a typical day. But I have typical things I do, but every day is so different. I work on the computer to do things like the typical packaging. And then I also have two printing presses, so I do a lot of limited edition packaging, and that is, you know, all done with very primitive equipment. I have a printing press from 1894 and another one from the 50s, and so it's, you know, one color at a time, and either with, you know, movable metal type or movable wood type, and images that are made of metal or made of wood or made of photopolymer. So I can do, you know, anything that is a solid color with any of the, you know, any of those different combinations of materials.
Now, I've got a copy of Melvin's A Walk with Love and Death. Apparently, it's a limited edition vinyl version, hand silkscreen. So am I to assume that you worked on all of those?
Not the silkscreen. That's Tom Hazelmeyer.
Okay.
Does the silkscreen ones. And I do the letterpress ones. So they're, I don't know if you, I mean, hard to say. Like, but there, it's a different process. Letterpress printing is a different process than silkscreen printing.
Okay.
So
I'm not going to begin to understand it.
Well, so silkscreen is, you know, it's obviously like it's a wooden frame with a piece of silk nailed onto it, and the image is painted or screened onto the screen, and then the ink's poured in there, and you take a squeegee and that you pull it across the silk, and it transfers the ink onto the paper. Letterpress printing is a giant printing press. One of them is like half the size of a Volkswagen, and then the other one's a little bit smaller than that. And what it does is it transfers ink onto a raised surface, and then that raised surface presses the ink into the paper or the cardboard. Mm. So it makes an indentation into the image, or the image makes an indentation into the surface that you're printing on. So it's a different kind of a process than silkscreen printing.
So you work on the computer each day, develop some of the imagery, and then transfer it to the letterpress as needed.
Or I send it to the record label, and they send it to the offset printing, which is what, you know, standard, which is what you see in the store is offset. Like the letterpress things are very, very limited. Like we make anywhere between, like sometimes a small run will be maybe 30, and then up to, I think the biggest run that I've done on my press is 300. And then I also did a letterpress package for Tool, which we printed at a different press, and we did, I believe we did like 3,000 of those, which I could not do on my press. That's a little different.
Okay. What was that? Was the opiate one?
Yeah.
Have
you seen that one?
21st anniversary. Yeah. Well, I blinked and I missed the opportunity to get one. So yeah, that's.
Yeah, there weren't very many.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
Of course, yeah. It's desirable, and it's a nice thing, and it's something to spend years for searching. It's a purpose. So when you're creating art for different albums and artists, do the artists come to you with ideas? They share with you what they're looking for and make ideas from there? Or do you have a portfolio that they're able to choose from? How does that process work?
Totally varies depending on who I'm working with. Like for the Bad Religion cover, they just, you know, they just said, here's the title, you know, go for it. Same with the Melvins, it's usually like that too. Buzz might have some idea of something that he would like to include, or a feeling that he, you know, would like to go for. But, you know, most of the time I just start playing with ideas, and then I'll, you know, present like, here's three options, or here's five options, or whatever, and then we'll pick a direction and then go with that. With Tool, Adam has very specific ideas about what he's looking for, and specific, I mean, he really likes to work with specific artists, in Alex Gray in particular. So a lot of times, you know, we're starting out working with either something that Alex Gray's already made, or something that he's making specifically for the package, that's how this most recent thing worked. Just, there was a specific image that he created for this for the Fear Inoculum package, and then everything related to that figure.
How long in advance does this planning begin? Like, I would imagine the putting this package together probably started at least a year ago.
Yeah, we had been talking about it for several years. Mm-hmm. You know, we had talked about it and done research. I had actually contacted some companies more than 2 years ago about the video packaging, because we were going to do it for another package for a smaller release, and then decided to do it for this one. So, I mean, some of the research had been done years and probably more than 2 years ago, actually.
Yeah, I would imagine the price point came down over that time. So
no, it went up.
Oh, it went up? Really? What, yeah. What was the explanation for that?
Well, because everything goes up. The paper goes up. The work goes up. And a lot of things changed in those, you know, couple of years, because when we first started looking into it, there were companies that were actually doing all of it here, the video and everything here. And then by the time we ended up going to print with this, we couldn't really afford or find anyone that made the video screens here. So it changed. So then it might have been cheaper in some ways, but then there's shipping from, the manufacturer overseas that is also adds to the cost.
Now, are the runs of these done? I think there was the initial run and then the follow-up run. Is that it for these?
That's it. So I think, supposedly, yes, that's it. And because there's a whole other version coming out without a video.
Yeah, I think that one's already starting to ship, the one with more pages and whatnot. So
it's a whole book. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a 58-page book or something. I can't remember. It's around there. It's a big book. It's cool.
Okay. Are those limited quantities as well? I think, should I grab one?
I think that is going to be, what's out now, mm-hmm. going forward. So I don't think there's just one version of it, and I think that's going to be what's available from here on out.
Okay. Is there artwork ready to go if and when a vinyl release comes out?
Some, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There will be a vinyl. The package is designed, and the box it's coming in and what it's going to look like is done.
It's not a widescreen video, is it?
No video.
Yeah, IMAX.
Right. That would be cool.
Yeah. So in terms of the other releases as well, Anima, Lateralis, vinyl releases, artwork for those done, just kind of waiting in queue?
No. We've talked about them. But we haven't worked on those yet.
Okay. So when you have this sort of artwork coming together, you've got these the visuals and the functionality. You got a lot of components, especially in this Fear Inoculum package. You had relatively few leaks. There were we really didn't see a lot about it online. The team was able to keep it very secret until maybe a few days before. How was that managed?
'Cause we didn't show anything to the record label until it was done, mm-hmm. and printed. Because that's where, I don't know if I should say that, but that's where the leaks happened. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure. It wasn't, it was like the second we turned in art, every time to the record label, it was out there. So that was, I don't know how they got that approved, but that's the difference.
Well, it starts to become out of your control at that point. And who knows, people start sharing it here and there. And it, yeah.
Oh, yeah, my friend. Yeah. He mm-hmm. won't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so the company that we worked with that, produces these video promotional things, they work with huge companies that have, a huge amount of protocol and in terms of secrecy. So they were really on it with that too. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, like they knew how to not let things, you know, get out on the internet, which was really helpful.
From an observer, from an outsider observing the rollout of Fear Inoculum, it was so impressive. In total Tool style, the secrecy, the step by step, having the streaming, all the back catalog available on streaming like 3 or 4 weeks ahead of time, building up to it, the rollout of the, you know, the announcement of the title of the album, everything. It just all, it was like watching a symphony. And I get the impression that we're probably not going to have such a musical release event, at least in my lifetime anyway. How did it feel on the inside?
It was really intense. It was a lot of work, but I'm super happy with how it all worked and how, you know, we didn't get anything leaked out and the package got, you know, printed and then people got to see it. So I felt good about that.
Well, job well done. Now you've had quite a significant career doing all this artwork for many different albums. And my wife, she's an artist too. She does painting, and her biggest challenge is often just knowing when to stop. How do you know when an album cover or piece of artwork is ready, when it's done?
Wow. When it's due, I guess.
When it escapes. Yeah.
When it's like, you know, when the due date is.
Someone's knocking here, on the door.
It's done.
Mackie?
That's it.
Mackie, we need that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm good at deadlines. I have a system of working within those. So, I believe there's like value in procrastination. So that, like, I think usually when I get a project, I'll work on it a whole bunch, do research and play around with ideas. And then I, like, if I have time, just go away from it and work on something else for a while, because I feel like in the time when I step away from the project, this whole other realm of, I guess, creativity and inspiration happens, just beyond the force of, like, me sitting in front of it, you know, with my Wacom pad and my mouse. Like, there's just this whole world that happens in the subconscious that introduces new, you know, ideas on how to adjust the design or the colors or the elements in it. And so I try to look at the schedule of when things are due and, you know, make my, you know, structure my work time so that I have time to take a break from something and then go back to it and have a certain amount of time when I go back to it to be able to implement the ideas that arise from that period of, taking a break.
Is there nervousness in the middle part? Like you say, you start to have some ideas and then you let it go for a while. Is it still kind of in the back of your mind? Is there apprehension, or do you just have
no
faith?
Not really. Not okay. At this point.
Okay. You know it'll come together.
Yeah, because usually I have it enough together by the time I take a break that I'm like, you know, if I take a break and, like, no ideas come, it's pretty much okay and ready to go. And then sometimes when I take a break, like, I'll get some totally different idea and change it around a lot. But then a lot of times it's just like, I'll have an idea about a different way to kind of texturize the background or to present a different color arrangement or, you know, add like some tiny element here or there. So I don't like push myself to a point where I'm going to create stress. around the project getting finished.
All right. You've done this enough times to where you understand your rhythms and in the creative process.
Yeah. I've worked for myself for a long time, and I've kind of got the hang of, how to adjust my schedule so that I can get things done without creating, unnecessary anxiety and stress for myself or the people that I'm working for.
And I know you're quite an avid practitioner of yoga. Do a lot of your creative ideas come to you while you're doing yoga?
Not a lot, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I think a lot. Maybe when I'm meditating, things come to me, but not so much when I'm in the asana practice and in the moving and breathing. But yeah, when I sit down to meditate, that is definitely a place where my imagination can go, kind of explore different realms of imagery.
What would you say are some of the guiding principles of good album artwork?
I want to be able to see it and know what it's for when I'm walking through the store.
Mm-hmm.
Although that's becoming less and less relevant when I'm looking at, iTunes or whatever. I want to be able to, see what the name of the band is, at least on that little 1x1-inch square. I think it's one of the most important. You can see, what is this for? What package is this? Is this, is this tool? Is this the Melvins? Is this Bad Religion or, whatever? Like, I want to be able to go, okay, I'm looking for a Tool record and recognize that that's what it is.
Still the marketing of it. Because, and to me, look, there are some album covers that are absolutely compelling, and I don't know why. And there are other ones that it doesn't communicate anything to me. And is that all in the eye of the beholder? Or do you think there's something there, some sort of connection that the artist can help make?
Oh, I think there's definitely, principles, good principles of design, and there's good principles of, any kind of visual presentation that, there's rules that you can follow, and then if you know those rules, you can break those rules, but if you don't know those rules, sometimes you can break them and still come up with something that works, and sometimes you can, think I'm going to go outside of all of the boxes of what works, and then it's just a mess.
How important is it to have a single vision for a project versus working with a team of individuals on a project?
I really prefer working with one person. So if there's more than one person involved at this point, I will often just request that, that they have their conversation, and then I work with, whoever that they elect to be the captain or the, whatever, the king of their ship, because it's just really challenging to field, five opinions or however many. I've done work with committees, and I just, I'm totally not a committee person. It doesn't work for me. I don't like it. I feel like everything that I've worked on that has been guided by a committee is probably not in my portfolio.
what do they say, the single hand to shake or throat to choke?
Yeah, yeah, basically. Because it just ends up being like, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen. And so, you know, like five people put in their own version of, you know, like, well, I like mushroom salt and I like paprika salt. And then it just turns into a mess. So it turns into like, you know, a five-headed dog or something. Well, not that that would be bad, but like just what it just turns into like, you know, a unicorn, you know, riding a snail in a, you know, mountain range that somebody's sister painted.
In your portfolio, what are the projects that you are most proud of?
Oh, wow. Let me think. I mean, the stuff that I've done for the Melvins is some of my favorite stuff ever. I'm trying to think. Like, I really like Trace Cabrones, the one with all the goats and the car crashes. They've done so many records, I'm trying to remember. Then there's this one, I can't even remember the title of which one it is, but it's got like, it folds open and there's like five of the same artichoke on the inside. That was one of my favorite ones. And I like, I think it's Bride Screamed Murder, when I took these really, like we found just a different, like swap meets, all these really weird old photos and then layered them with a bunch of different images of messed up paper from scrapbooks, and that's one of my favorite ones. I like the Melvins box set, which I don't know if you've seen that. It was
that 10 CD one.
Yeah, I think it's 13.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, like that was one of the first things I did when I started working with my, you know, the letterpress printing, and I was just really happy with how that came out. And then since then, just a lot of fun stuff has happened with the letterpress, like that just happened so randomly. Like my parents had all these old records that they were getting rid of, so I took all the old records and dumped the records out of it and then printed on top of those, and then we released those as a limited edition. So every single one is different, and the cool thing about it was just how these, you know, random images, you know, that I was letterpress printing and the amazing wood type, which I love, and the way that it interacted with the images of the actual, you know, old record covers, like, you know, Tennessee Ernie Ford sings, you know, gospel hymns and stuff like that. So, like, and then with the Crazy Melvins over type over it and the images that we used over that, that was, like, just, like, these really happy accidents. That's one of my favorite things. And we did the same thing with Crystal Fairy letterpress, and some of those came out, like, just, like, so cool. Like, there was this big skull, and then in the middle of the eye of the skull, there was, like, a couple kissing or something like that. It was just, like, the really cool juxtaposition of the images of the old records alongside the, you know, like these new images that we brought into it from the design of the photopolymer, which is a, you know, one way of printing things with letterpress, and then like the vintage wooden type. Just was kind of a magical combination.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you really enjoy some of these ambitious projects, especially, you know, like the Melvin's 13 CD box set. I mean, once that idea is proposed and you start working through the logistics and all the details of it, that's a lot of work. I mean, and it's got to be exhausting, but you must be excited about that once those ideas come flowing. Yeah.
That's the most fun. That other thing I really enjoyed and like feel really proud of is the Melvin's book that we did called Neither Here Nor There. I don't know if you saw that, but that was a huge project where we contacted all these different artists who were kind of fans of the Melvins, and they submitted artwork for the book, and then we had different people write articles for it, and that came out so cool. That was really fun. And then I've also worked on one kind of major book for Chet Czar, and that was really I really was happy with that. I like doing the books and bigger projects like that. It's fun to get to spend that much time with something.
Who were some of the artists that inspired you to get on the path of being an artist?
Let me see. Well, I really like a lot of the kind of 50s designers, like Paul Rand, and then even some other more modern. I really like Von Oliver. I mean, these are record cover designers. What's his name? Steinweiss did like records in the 50s, and he's one of my very favorites, and one of the best music packaging or record cover designers of all time. Like, his stuff is just genius. So he's one of We sold almost all of our records, but I kept all of the covers from him just because I love his work so much. I'm trying to think. I like Paul Bass. Most of my inspiration comes from, as far as like art goes, comes from the graphic design world. Rather than fine art.
Yeah. When you were young, did you dream of having a type press in your house?
No. When I was young, I wanted to be a horse trainer.
Okay.
When I first started even considering that art might be a way of, generating income of some kind, it was never about fine art. It was always about graphic design, because it just it seemed like that would be realistic. And so I think in my first dreams of being a graphic designer, it was definitely along the lines of, record covers, but also just I really was inspired by magazines like Graphis and Communication Arts, and Andy Warhol's Interview magazine, things like that were just, so beautifully graphic design driven, that's what I wanted to work on, is that kind of thing.
And I understand you have an event coming up, Inky PsyOps and Printed Schemes.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
That was organized by our friend Tom Hazelmeyer. He used to have a gallery called OxOp, and he had the record label Amphetamine Reptile. And so he's the one that does the silkscreen art. He still puts out records, limited edition, that are printed silkscreen. So we've done a lot of stuff with him. We did Tom and I and Tom's wife Lisa and Buzz did a show in Austin a few years ago, and then we were going to do a show in Austin, and I think it was in September, and that fell through. So then we shifted it. He found this gallery here in LA that so we're going to do the show there, and it's you know, part his artwork and part mine, and then Buzz is going to play a solo show, and probably he's been doing a lot of photography, so I think we're going to just bring some books of his photos too. So, and then there's a couple different bands that are going to be doing a release party also. So it's like a big extravaganza. Yeah.
Do you do many showings, many exhibitions?
No, I hardly ever do that. I really don't. That's, you know, like it's venturing into the realm of like fine art, which I don't really feel comfortable in. So yeah, I avoid it.
It's not your thing. You'd rather.
Not my thing. Okay. Definitely not my thing.
Well, it sounds like you have plenty else to keep you busy. Now, we typically don't get into any gossip on our show at all, but just one question. How does a guy like Buzz Osborne propose marriage?
Very nervously. It wasn't, there was no like on the knee with the ring or anything like that, but it was very cute. So, just almost like, I think he put his hand in front of his face and, you know, asked me to marry him. And I said, yes. And we were in San Francisco. I think it was the 4th of July.
Mackie, thank you so much for coming on The Vinyl Guide and sharing with us these stories of art creation for records, some of our favorite ones, and an inside peek at what it took to make this beautiful Fear Inoculum package. I want to call people's attention to a couple of things here. January 17th at La La Land Gallery, there's going to be the Inky Psyops Imprinted Scheme Show. Tom Hazelmeyer, Mackie Osborne Designs, a solo performance by King Buzzo, more art, possibly some photography. Sounds like a big night. January 17th, 2020 at La La Land Gallery in Santa Monica. Also, just to make sure everyone checks out MackieOsborne.com. There's additional artwork up there. And of course, Mackie does some yoga classes, which you can potentially do as well. And everyone who's listening probably already belongs to this, but if not, Facebook.com/Melvin's Army. Always cool stuff and information up there on Melvin's and tour dates and schedules. And of course, the great work of Mackie Osborne. Mackie, thank you so much for coming on The Vinyl Guide.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, the great Mackie Osborne, giving us a little bit of a glimpse behind the curtain, and for which we are forever grateful. Again, go to MackieOsborne.com or Facebook.com/MackieOsborneDesignStuff. And if you can, if you're in Los Angeles, or if you can get there on January 17th, the Inky Psyops Imprinted Scheme Show at the La La Land Gallery. Go to it. Enjoy yourself. I'm sure it'll be a great evening. All right, that is it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. I want to thank all the patrons of The Vinyl Guide podcast, people who've gone to patreon.com/vinylguide and contributed, and that money is going to the Australian bushfires. Huge thanks to Brian Dressel, Cameron Kenny, Chuck Boyd, Dan T., David Messer, David Phillips, David Well-Beloved, Declan Phoenix, Dominic Gagliano, Finn Jacobson, Greg Arakawa, Gustav Lanz, James Dumont, Jen Generator Di Eugenio, John Liliquist, John Raptis, Jonathan Maka, Marcel Berto de Souza, Como Está, Kevin Mosher, Lee Graham, Michael Howerton, Michael Caluzzi, Mike DiGrazio,
Nick Zinn, Ricky Harris, Ron Winter, Regis Wack, the Honorable Sean Kelly, Sean Kenny, and Tim Clifford. All of you, thank you so much for joining us at the patreon.com/vinylguide page. Your money is going to the Australian bushfire victims and helping us repair from this horrible disaster. And everyone else, it's not too late for you. Go to patreon.com/vinylguide and sign up now. That's it for this week's episode. Next week is episode 200. Who will it be? I guess you'll have to wait and find out. Till we talk next time, cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.